From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's Friday night, and we're talking with singer-songwriter Phil Roy.
I got a feeling something's wrong. I got a feeling something's very wrong. I smell trouble in the air. I sense things that were never here before. There must be something you're feeling now.
Phil Roy's first musical memory is sitting in the car as a five-year-old, swinging his feet and listening to the Four Tops. The Philadelphia native was raised on the OJs, the Delphonics, the Spinners, the smooth Philly soul sound, and grew into John Coltrane, Herbie Hancock, Chick Corea. The kid in the car ended up a songwriter in L.A., writing soul and pop tracks for Ray Charles, Aaron Neville, Joe Cocker, and for films from Leaving Las Vegas to As Good As It Gets. But life in L.A. was wearing him out, and writing for Pop America was wearing him down. The goodness that made me me was vanishing, he says. So Phil Roy packed his bags and headed back east. He started writing and singing for himself, cutting his first album, Grouchy Friendly, in 2000. He was named 2002 Independent Artist of the Year by Musicians Atlas magazine. Phil Roy is a songwriter of uncommon insight. He's not afraid of the dark and finds its soft beauty. His new album, Issues and Options, he says, has been his own salvation, his rebirth as a writer and as a man. You can hear how deep the feeling goes, what a long road Phil Roy has traveled. In Issues and Options, you can hear bitterness, beauty, intimate conversation, and all kinds of breakthrough. Joining me now from Burlington, Vermont, is Phil Roy. His new album is Issues and Options. Good evening and welcome, Phil Roy.
Good to be here with you, Tom.
It's great to have you. Phil, we get all kinds of music here, and I have to say there was a stack of CDs, and here's what I do. I take them, I drive home in the car, I'm plugging them into the CD player, one after another, and 99 out of 100, I throw in the back seat and never hear again. I put yours in, forgive me, I didn't know the name, and in 5 seconds, I was hooked on this album. It's a different sound, it's beautiful, I'm... Now it's all I play. It's great to have you on the show.
That's some good news, Tom.
That's
beautiful. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a tremendous thing. I've learned a lot about you since running into you absolutely cold, and what a story. You're a singer-songwriter with all kinds of success in writing for others who finally turned around. It sounds to me, from the sound of your own story as told by Phil Roy, from a pretty low point, began doing your own thing, and wow, did you come back in splendor. Tell us a bit about that.
You know, I left for Los Angeles, actually from Boston. I was at Berklee College of Music, as a teenager, and, you know, had a guitar and some dreams and some hopes. And, I didn't really know where it was going to lead me, but I kind of got into the songwriting thing in college, and it led me to Los Angeles, where I started out. I'm making my own records and in bands and getting signed to major labels. And that road didn't really lead anywhere. But it did lead me to my songwriting career, which, like you said, I've written songs for Ray Charles and Joe Cocker and the Nevilles and many, many films and big publishing deals and living that L.A. lifestyle. And as I got to be about 40, things weren't – the view just wasn't looking – I couldn't see much except for, like, you know, I was pretty – the view wasn't good.
From the outside, Phil Roy, it looks like the dream story. Young musician, goes to Berklee School of Music, goes to L.A., songwriter. His songs are sung by big names. There they are in the big movies. It sounds like the golden road. What was it about it that didn't suit you?
Well, what happens is the main crux of – whether you're in the film business or in the music business – they want to see income come in. They want to see hits. They want to see hits. And, the names that we mentioned are some of the more legendary people in popular music that had sung my song. Now, that still amazes me, and I am just grateful for all those people that wrapped their voices around my songs. But in a strange way, most of them were not what the industry calls hit records, and they did not bring back the returns monetarily that would make me in their eyes, looked successful.
So the artists picked them up and loved them, but these weren't the ones that sold the Mega Millions.
No.
And so there you were, hanging in between your artistry and pop success.
And after a while of chasing that elusive hit, it kind of, one failure in particular, which was, I wrote a song for a movie called I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, which was a popular icon, young teen star named Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yep, remember it well.
She was on the cover of Rolling Stone. This big producer named David Foster produced the record. It was Columbia Pictures release. It looked like, well, here we go. The chorus came in right. We're going to get a shot here after, 17 years. It looked like it was going to go.
Off to the races.
I'm in it. Here we are. Yeah. And it just went to number 59 in the charts. It midlined. It really didn't do I had expectations of. And I just went from that point on, I am tired of chasing this elusive hit. And I noticed the great artists that I go home and listen to, like the Tom Waits and the Joni Mitchells of the world and the Dylans, and, they aren't played on commercial radio.
They're not anymore.
Even David Bowie and a lot of the newer acts that were coming. There's this little place on the dial, that public radio stations that play music. I was listening to the music on that end of the dial and just going
Why isn't this all over the dial?
but
it's not.
And then again.
Philroy, I forgive me, but I want to get some more music out there because not everybody listening tonight will know your sound. And it's quite a remarkable one. I want to hear more about this career and the whole world of songwriting. I also want to get into Philroy's emotional world, the place from which you write. Let's listen to a bit here of a track called Melt. You wrote this with Nicolas Cage. We want to hear about that. But first, let's just hear. It's about breaking up, heartbreak, not being able to let go. Melt. Philroy.
I can't touch you now. I'm paralyzed. I'm like a child with the saddest eyes. You won't talk to me. You're over me. You won't take me back. I need you back. You're so alive. Makes me numb. I could survive, but I don't want to. You're the ruby, and I'm the lead. Feeling heavy, am I dead? But last night, I had a dream. I saved your life. I proved my love. I took the bullet. Killed a shark, kissed your hand, thawed your heart, I thawed your heart. You're not around, I'm lost. Seems all I do anymore is hit the sauce. At the end of another glass is a drop of gin, and I'm sinking. But last night I had a dream. I saved your life, proved my love. I took the bullet, killed a shark, kicked some ass. I won your heart. I won your heart. Do you want to? You do want to? Cause I want you. Cause I need you. Do you want to? Say you want to. Cause I want you. Cause I.
Philroy singing Melt from his new album, Issues and Options. Wow, Phil, I've got to ask you, here you are, I've got all this pop experience, and we can hear when you finally kind of break into that lighter sound that we associate with Papa, you start out this song and so many of these songs on Issues and Options very dark. Help us understand where that's generated from, how you ride that line between what you know is pop brightness and genuine darkness. I have to say, when the album first came on, I thought, ooh, this is very moody, this is very blue, this is even dark, maybe too dark. But it got right. You got your hooks into me at that level in a way that's uncommon these days. Then when you broke into the kind of brighter land in the middle of some of these songs and right off in some of these songs, it was double bright because you were there. Is this Phil Roy's trauma that you bring to the kind of dark bass of Issues and Options?
Trauma is a great word. I was traumatized, man. I you know, there's a certain, I'll just say,
yeah.
The stories are very personal, but I find that having the stories and the lyrics and so personal that there's a universality to it. And mm-hmm. I can hear that in your voice, that you connected maybe to some of my stories, that maybe there's a little piece of it in your life and the people that I've heard my music or see me play. You know, there was someone came up to me last night after a show and said, "You say what I think. You say, but I don't know how to express myself, but you do it."
Well, you really do. I mean, it's often said that the kind of darkest secrets that we have, once put out in the light of day, can be seen shared by everybody. But there aren't that many artists articulating that side of the tracks these days.
You
I don't know
if
it was your courage or your desperation that led you to do it.
Well, you know, I actually, with one of your probably, what would I call it, brethren down in New York, and he called the music bleakly optimistic. Yeah. I want to talk about how you said that, wow, this stuff is dark. It is dark. And, you know, my own internal dialogue sometimes can be not the greatest place to live. And,
but you're not running from that here. You're kind of acknowledging it. You're getting gentle with that dark place. And then somehow you turn it. In almost every song, you show a glimmer on the edges of it that
brings there's hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a hope because as much as I've struggled with my own emotional turmoil, you know, I always went to bed and I was like, well, you know what? Tomorrow is going to be, it's going to get better. I'm going to go to sleep and it's going to get better. And if it didn't, and that better didn't come up for weeks or months on end, literally, especially in the last phase of my Los Angeles years,
yeah.
I still always believe that, you know what, I'm going to crawl out of this. I'm going to crawl out of this place that where I'm at, and it's going to be all right.
Well, you draw a kind of new melancholy bass line, but you turn it into something very, very beautiful, Phil Roy. We're going to go into a break here with a song entitled Undeniably Human from Phil Roy's new album, Issues and Options. Listen to these lyrics. Neurotic minds have a life of their own, and I'm guilty, yeah, I'm filthy, for blaming it all on you.
That's true.
But it ends up beautiful.
I think about you for hours on end. Maybe it's only all inside my head. But I feel the difference. I feel the distance, even when you're close to me. You always tell me that there's nothing wrong. Neurotic minds have a life of their own. And I'm guilty, yeah, I'm filthy, for blaming it all on you, all on you. As we get closer, I finally see it. It's not you, baby, it's my jealousy. So please understand me. I guess I'm just undeniably human. Love me, that's what I need. That makes me undeniably human.
Talking tonight with singer-songwriter Phil Roy. His new album is Issues and Options. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
I called you up to apologize. I called you up to get things right. Ain't easy feeling sneezy when you're such an angel.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with singer-songwriter Phil Roy about his new album, Issues and Options. Here, a track from that album, She Hurts.
She hurts and weeps, looking at the photograph she keeps beside her telephone. She talks to herself. There's no one else to listen to her voice, a sound she's grown to know so well. She hurts, it's true. The years have stole the beauty of her youth. She once had many suitors. Now her mind, once so sharp, has steadily declined. It's sad, but it happens all the time.
Phil Roy with She Hurts from his new album, Issues and Options. Phil, here you take it on again, this time at the other end of life, the late end of life, She Hurts. It sounds like someone's old mother dealing with age, dealing with loneliness.
This was based on not a personal story, because my parents are actually in good health and
bravo for them.
Bravo, absolutely. Thankfully for that. And, but there are so many people that friends I have, parents getting older, and actually just, from reading, I'm a big, I read the newspaper pretty much, scoured every day, and just the idea of people growing old, and it's tough. I mean, it's tough enough in my own experience, being lonely. Loneliness is... It can be a killer, and even if you're, in your 20s, 30s, but when you start getting about 80 and there's no one there to visit you, no one is calling, no one, and you just have these memories left, and from that perspective, She Hurts was written.
She hurts, and so the church is where she knows she can depend on God, her one.
Every track on this album, as far as I can see, is co-written. This one, She Hurts, with Glenn Tilbrook and Kathy Dennis.
That's right.
We mentioned earlier Melt, co-written with Nicolas Cage. Do you always co-write? Did you just co-write for this album? Tell us about that.
I have a long history of collaborating, sort of winged on it. From the very early beginnings of my songwriting career, I was always in bands. I was always had partners and... there's a precedent, the Gershwin brothers, and if you look at Lennon McCartney, if you look at Holland, Dozier Holland, there's just something about it when you get into the collaborative process.
And what is it for you? Does it break loose the emotions, or does it the back and forth build the musical structure? How's it most helpful?
Well, the back and forth idea, of tossing that ball back and forth on a particular idea appeals to me. You can see that I'm a collaborator on this record. A lot of the songs, a lot of the lyrics, I don't say who wrote the melody, who wrote the words, sort of what Lennon and McCartney did. Mm-hmm. Most of the time there are times when I would write, every word. I need to be alone to write that lyric. Mm-hmm. And maybe the music was somebody else's. There's other times when maybe I was more involved with the music. So it is collaborative, but I have to say it can also be very personal in me. I might spend 3 months on a line. There's a line in a song called Amazing, which...
we'll hear that later.
I remember spending... I just couldn't quite get a certain part of that together. So
collaborative, but still very personal at that level. And what about the Nicolas Cage connection? That's not a name we expected to see here. Yet you wrote music for Leaving Las Vegas. How did you come to work with Nick Cage on a song?
Well, Nick and I, that came out of a long personal relationship, just being friends. We kind of came up together in Los Angeles. I think I met him right after he finished Birdie. Mm-hmm. And spent a lot of time hanging out. And if you spend enough time with me, Tom, hanging out, you start writing songs too. That's the way that goes. You know, we just actually we've written a half a dozen songs together, maybe even a little more. And yeah, the way Melt came about, we were just in I think out of the beach.
You guys sitting on the beach?
We're sitting inside. We could be.
I
with
can't
the waves
touch you now. I'm paralyzed. I'm like a child sitting, of the saddest eyes. It doesn't sound like Beach Boys music.
Yeah, we're just on a little blanket watching the waves. No, we're just inside, yeah. but out in Malibu is for your listeners. It's a very special part of the world. You know, I had a little melody, and that muse walked in the room. And then we started passing that ball back and forth. About 45 minutes later, that lyric was basically done. We were both going through, I think, upheavals of our, romantic lives.
Yeah.
And, you can toil on them for 3 months and try to get a line. And or they can just come
sometimes
to you.
Sometimes they burst right out there.
And that's the ones. I love it when that happens.
Yeah, that's a gift, huh?
It is a true gift.
I want to turn to God is not sleeping. I see somehow in that same vein, I wouldn't be surprised if this ends up in, this could be a 21st century kumbaya you got going here.
Thanks. Tom, Mavis Staples just cut this too. It's on my record, but Mavis heard it and just loved it.
Well, you sing it beautifully. Let's listen. God is Not Sleeping from Phil Roy's Issues and Options.
God is not sleeping. No. You got to believe it. He's the only one I know. Never refuse me, never deceive me. In the struggles of my life, he's right there beside me. Protect me and guide me. From the hills coming thunderworms, and those words live in my soul. That's why I know God is not sleeping. No. You got to believe it. Hold on. Whatever you're needing, God is not sleeping. In the stillness of the night, in every corner of the world, while we are sleeping, he is still working. When the prayers go up, the blessings come down, yes, he is working. He never stops working. God is not sleeping. Got to believe it. Whatever your dream is, God is not sleeping. Oh. Yeah, everything I own is temporary. Only love is necessary. Yeah, everything I have is temporary. Only love is necessary. Everything I have is temporary. Only love is necessary. Everything I own is temporary. Only God's love is necessary. Necessary, necessary, necessary.
With God Is Not Sleeping from his new album Issues and Options. And it brings me right back, Phil, to that that sensibility which runs through this whole CD, which again strikes me somehow as a new kind of bass line. I mean, you're breaking out of the old framework, I mean, Woody Guthrie, you name it, where it can sing about all kinds of hard things, but the background tone is this big green world. Your background tone is something darker, a little more post-apocalyptic, saying, hey, look, it's not all green and sunny. There's a lot of dark and there's a lot of trouble, but I'm going to sing you through this anyway. And that just insinuates itself into a listener's ears, if I can speak for myself, in a way that at first blush, ooh, wait a minute, this is dark. And then here you come, and it turns out bright.
Here I come. I'm coming in hopeful. I'm coming in for a landing, and we're gonna hopefully end up in a better place
on the runway. And in this one, with God at your side, is that a personal thing or?
It is a personal thing. I am very, you know, I am was raised in a family. My family has been, you know, Jews for generations, and you know, I and spirituality has always been a part of my upbringing. I'm not really that practicing. You know, in becoming an adult, I have met many friends of all different faiths, and when I do talk about God on the record, it is not anyone's God. It's more everyone's God. Mm-hmm. You know, and I wrote this song, and I have to say this: I wrote this song with Barrington Levy, which might not be a household name for most Americans or people listening.
It's not for me.
There.
Tell us.
Barrington Levy is one of the most revered Jamaican artists in Jamaica. Mm. He is, and around the world, in certain circles, Barrington Levy, of course it's not Bob Marley of that kind of status, but he is a great, great Jamaican artist.
Well, and as soon as you say that, then God is not sleeping. I can hear it in a reggae tone if you wanted to put it
in. It could have been, Jah is not sleeping.
Yeah.
Jah, no.
Yeah,
you've got to
right
believe
there.
It.
Yeah.
Hang on. You know, it could have been about Jah Jah.
Yeah.
You know, it could have
been.
So it is. And Barrington and I wrote, we've known each other about 10 years, and I wrote songs for his records, his last two albums. One is called a classic in Jamaica in reggae circles. Mm-hmm. It's called Vice Versa Love, and Vice Versa Love. You know, you give love, receive love, huh? And you know, I went down and worked with Sly and Robbie on that in Kingston, and you know, but Barrington came to my home. And we sat down, and he walked through the door, and he traveled like 3 hours from like Westchester, New York, and flew from Jamaica. And I really wasn't in the place of writing at that point. I was more into finishing this record up.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, oh, Barrington, I was calling to cancel, and he was in the car on the New Jersey Turnpike.
You can't cancel on the man then.
And I can't cancel, and I'm like, okay, Barrington. So I cooked him up some nice chicken and some rice and some beans, and I knew he was coming, and he's a great guy. And he walked in, and just we caught up on our personal lives, and I just recently got married and moved out of Los Angeles, and he knew of some of the trials and tribulations that I had been through in these last couple of years. And he looked at how happy I was, and he just went, Philroy, God is not sleeping.
Hey.
And I just went, Barrington, that is the song we are writing today.
That is how
these things happen.
Well, I wanted to ask you just on that front about this writer's life. I mean, the way you describe it in bits and pieces here tonight, you're struggling through life, and every once in a while, lightning strikes, or else you grind the lightning out. But were you writing every day, or were you, I don't know, stumbling along the beach in emotional despair, waiting for
a
song to
fly?
I
was writing along, writing. I'm one of the craft of songwriting is a craft. And it needs to be nurtured, and it needs to be it's a discipline, and it is. And then you get to a point where you just know, you know, you wait for those inspirations. You know when they're coming. You know when something is about to happen, and it just jumps out. I was writing a lot being signed to these. I was writing pretty much 2.5 albums a year for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. Because I had songwriting commitments contractually.
Is that an enormous amount, a medium amount, a small amount?
You know,
I don't know.
It's like, you know, that is, you know, 25, 30 songs a year.
That's 2 a month. You're working all the time.
You know, you're working. And, you know, you can, hey, listen, there's guys in Nashville that do this thing that, you know, knock out a song a day. And but then you hear what these songs a day sound like.
Yeah.
I don't believe that anyone, and there's people like Leonard Cohen who will spend, you know, 3 years on one lyric for a song. Mm-hmm. So it's how it works, you know. I found that, you know, in this particular period of my life, I had written so many songs that I really didn't need to concentrate on the songwriting as much anymore as how am I going to get people to hear these songs? That's the big turning point for me in my life.
Phil, I want to come back and talk about that in just a minute. We've got to take a break here. We're going to go into it listening to the haves and the have-nots. Here we get a little touch of the political, emotional Phil Roy. And you'll hear it loud and clear. This is from his new album, Issues and Options.
Who will be loved tonight? Who will sleep alone? Have no one suffocate the spirit and the soul. Some people get a chance, others they never get a shot. This is the story of the have and the have-nots. Some people learn to give, others they just keep what they got. Is the story of the have and the have-nots, and it just ain't fair. No, it's not fair. If you're a have-not,
talking tonight with singer-songwriter Phil Roy. His new album is Issues and Options. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A little kindness, a little compassion could sure change things.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with singer-songwriter Phil Roy about his new album, Issues and Options. From that album, here's the cut, Everybody's Somebody.
Hello, Mr. Mingle. Would you please include me? Even though you think of me as ordinary, you must look in the mirror and hate what you see. To treat me like a translucent groupie. Everybody's somebody, and nobody's a nobody. Everybody's somebody, you,
her,
him,
me.
Everybody's somebody, nobody's a nobody.
Everybody's somebody, nobody's nobody. Once you get to know me, you might appreciate the composure of a loner with the will to create a life, a dream not so different from yours. The saint, the sinner, the
pimping is home. Everybody's somebody and nobody's a nobody. Everybody's somebody. You have him, me. Everybody's somebody and nobody's a nobody. Everybody's somebody, yeah. You know it. Everybody's somebody. Nobody's a nobody. Everyone got something to say. Everyone got something.
All right.
Somebody and nobody's a nobody. Everybody's somebody. You, her, him, me. Everybody's somebody. Nobody's a nobody. Everybody's somebody. Yeah, you know it.
Everybody's somebody from Phil Roy's new album Issues and Options. And Phil, this sounds like an L.A. story. I don't know. You tell us. But you, Mr. Mingle sounds. I mean, here I'm interpreting. Mr. Mingle is a big shot of some kind. He says, "You must look in the mirror and hate what you see to treat me like a translucent groupie." What have we got going here?
I am not going to mention who this is about. I spent a long time in the world of celebrity in Los Angeles. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of people that will look at you while you'll be talking to them, and they'll be looking in around the room who's more important to that they're going to miss. I sum it up like this. There's these trade papers called Variety and The Hollywood Reporter.
Sure.
And, you know, every 7-Eleven carries them. Mm-hmm. I live now in a place that the 7-Elevens don't have Variety or the Hollywood Reporter. And you know what? I'm really happy
about
that.
And he's free,
that.
Baby. He's free.
I'm
he's
free,
back
baby.
In Philly,
I
and
am
he's free.
I can turn off Entertainment Tonight anytime I
and
want.
And don't care. But let me ask you, I mean, the fact is that all those years of writing for the Pop World still informs this album in a way that sits side by side with this dark beauty, this more personal sound. What's it like writing for pop and as you strove for pop success, and now writing free, how much does one inform the other? How different does it feel to be engaged in one or the other?
You know, they're not that different. I mean, I do have those skills. If someone would say, Phil, here's a task. We need you to write a song for, you know, Jennifer Lopez or Justin Timberlake or one of these contemporary pop artists out there right now, I do think that I do have the skills to do that. I choose now to use those sensibilities that I have in writing to make these little small independent movies of records. It's kind of like, I'm just thinking about it now, like a director that has made these huge Hollywood films and decided that they, you know what, I want to take a little bit of budget now and make a small little independent film. And you still bring those same skills with you.
But here in a whisper, in a kind of intimate conversation right in the ear of a friend, or
instead of being loud and we're going to hit you over the head with something like the big blockbusters have to do now, I actually think that there's something about when you whisper to someone instead of screaming at them, it actually draws you in more. There's something about quiet. There's something beautiful, so beautiful about quiet that I think that a lot of people have gotten away from that.
Phil, it's been great talking with you tonight. We're going to go out with one that's at the high end of your scale, a song called Amazing. And this one is just kicking it up. It's all about love and joy and uplift and redemption. I hope you found the love you're singing about here.
You know what? In doing this music and being on this particular journey, I actually met my wife. A girl driving down the street, listening to me do an interview, not unlike the one we're having right now.
Right.
She emailed me in Los Angeles, and, well, now I live with her in Pennsylvania.
Good as it gets.
And we're married, and it's a beautiful thing, man.
Hey, what do you know? It's all blue sky after all, but, wow, what a lovely storm getting there.
Great. It was just divine intervention on that one, man.
Well, we're going to go out listening to it. Phil Roy, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Tom, my very, 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 very sincere pleasure.
Phil Roy, singer-songwriter. His new album is Issues and Options. Here is Amazing.
So I'm gonna say it. You don't have to believe me, but you do it anyway. You're so amazing. I'm so amazing. Even my life falls into place when you tell me you love me. I'm amazed. Even at my lowest, you don't look down on me.
Find out more about Phil Roy and his music at our website, onpointradio.org. This is On Point.
So I'm gonna say you don't have to believe me, but you do it anyway. You're so amazing, I'm so amazing. Even my life falls into place when you tell me you love me. And I don't.
In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
Because Africans and Americans share a belief in the values of liberty and dignity, we must share in the labor of advancing those values. In a time of growing commerce across the globe, we will ensure that the nations of Africa are full partners in the trade and prosperity of the world.
It ought to be the subject of careful scrutiny, as well as some hearings and some research with regard to what it was we knew, what actions were taken, what statements were correct, and which ones were incorrect. The sooner we can acquire that information, the better for the country.
To think that somehow we went out of our way to insert this single sentence into the State of the Union address for the purpose of deceiving and misleading the American people is an overdrawn, overblown, overwrought conclusion.
I anticipate that we will be involved in Iraq in the future, and, sir, I don't know whether that means 2 years or 4 years. I just don't know.
I have a fear that the pattern that we see now, if left unchecked, we may find ourselves, General, in the throes of guerrilla warfare for years.
To put a limitation on the amount that they can recover, regardless of the permanent disfigurement, the incontinence, the blindness, the quadriplegia, that these people will suffer for a lifetime is fundamentally unfair.
Trans fat can no longer lurk hidden in our food choices. Americans will be armed with better information to reduce their intake of trans fat, saturated fat, and cholesterol, which could significantly lower the risk of heart disease, the leading cause of death in America today.
In the meantime, Lale was critical but holding on, and surgery to her brain continued. She continued to receive blood transfusion. However, at about 3:45 p.m., her circulation began to fail also. The whole team did everything to save her, but unfortunately, we lost her at 4 p.m.
And there's a week. President Bush spends that week on a whirlwind tour of five African nations. Democratic Senator Tom Daschle calls for an investigation into President Bush's claim made in the State of the Union address that Saddam Hussein tried to acquire nuclear materials from Africa. Colin Powell says the brouhaha surrounding the incorrect State of the Union allegation is overblown. General Tommy Franks offers the starkest assessment yet of the likely length of the U.S. commitment in Iraq, telling the Senate Armed Services Committee that American troops will be there for years. The committee's ranking Democrat, Ike Skelton, responds that he fears American troops are being bogged down in a guerrilla war. Richard Durbin and other Democrats succeed at killing legislation that would cap medical malpractice, pain, and suffering awards. The FDA announces that all food labels will soon have to tell consumers how much artery-clogging trans fats they contain. And Iranian adult conjoined twins Ladan and Lale Bijani die during surgery to separate them in Singapore. Jack, there it is, from continent-wide to two young women who lost their life, the whole range.
Yes, and if I might, Tom, I'd like to begin with something President Bush said in Africa. He said it in Senegal at Gori Island, the island which was the point of no return for slaves being shipped to North America. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is the most remarkable statement I have seen any American president give about slavery. He said, "For 250 years, the captives endured an assault on their culture and their dignity. The spirit of Africans in America did not break, yet the spirit of their captors was corrupted. Small men took on the powers and airs of tyrants and masters. Years of unpunished brutality and bullying and rape produced a dullness and hardness of conscience. Christian men and women became blind to the clearest commands of their faith and added hypocrisy to injustice. A republic founded on equality for all became a prison for millions." President Bush on American slavery.
It was a remarkable speech, and he went on to give the struggle to emancipate the slaves credit for emancipating America's own understanding of what freedom really is.
Yes, and here's a case where the president's religiosity, which in some ways serves him well and in other ways I think tends to a sort of oversimple view of the world, here it clearly served him well. He saw right through to the destroyed souls of the people who owned slaves.
It was powerful. In other realms, tough words this week. General Tommy Franks saying 2 years, 4 years, can't say how long American troops will be in Iraq. He and Donald Rumsfeld saying troop levels cannot come down, at least not this year. The cost of keeping troops in Iraq about double what was anticipated, nearly $4 billion per month. One long-term, big-ticket obligation there.
Yes, in an interview with Saddam Fedayeen in the Washington Post this week, he's saying that we have organized ourselves in cell structures so that if you catch two or three of us, we don't know where the others are. We're getting access to weapons. We're plotting even more devastating attacks. And we're in this for the long haul. He seemed motivated partly by radical Islamist ideology and partly by a kind of loyalty to Saddam. And he said that there were many thousands like him.
Everybody is desperate to see a kind of new order, a new economy emerging up out of this. It would be an antidote. But so far, even the most optimistic assessments aren't really pointing to that in any firm way, Jack.
No, and simply the civility, the order that you need to have an even primitive economy isn't there. People are not safe on the street. They just can't leave their houses. Businesses can't be transacted. It's a very I just can't understand how they didn't plan for the reality that so many people predicted that they were going to face, that occupying this country was going to be a huge problem, that there would be resistance, not necessarily from the population as a whole, but from pockets who are convinced and motivated guerrillas.
Well, there's going to be a lot of reality to face, especially with all of this going into a presidential campaign season. It's going to be something. Jack, have a great weekend, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Chris O'Connor, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog, with help from Julie Diop. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Have a great weekend. This is On Point.